Hey guys, welcome to the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. I'm your host for this episode. My name is Kevin Estella. I am recording from my brand new home office here in Moore County. As you guys know, the North Carolina office shut down. Just giving you guys a heads up, even though the physical location is shut down, I still plan on teaching the courses that I'm signed up for right now for Fieldcraft. So make sure you guys are checking out www.fieldcraftsurvival.com/training, and you'll see all the training that we got going on out here. Now, as I make my way through this morning and I'm drinking my second cup of coffee and, you know, planning all my trips for the summer, you know, you guys are going to hear a few things today that I think should drive home the importance of having a plan, having a good emergency plan. And if you guys have been through one of my classes, you know that, you know, we talk about the PACE planning principle: primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency. And you know that I'm a huge fan of the Garmin inReach. Like, that's like the do-all end-all when it comes to electronic signaling, in my opinion. I think anyone that is traveling to the backcountry should have one on them. And if you've been in my class, you probably heard me say everyone should have a Fox 40 whistle. And maybe that's because I'm like an old school, you know, back in the day lifeguard, and I carried a Fox 40 whistle with me everywhere. You know, you've been in my class, you probably heard me say you should probably have a signal mirror. Well, there is a new product, something that I was like, this is awesome. And I want to kind of focus on this idea of rescue, because as we get into the summer season, there are going to be more and more people you're going to hear about on hiking trails that are going to have a mechanical injury. They're going to fall. They're going to break a bone. They're going to have a vehicle get disabled. They need to signal for help. They're going to get lost, get stranded, whatever it may be. And I'm a firm believer that if you are traveling to the backcountry, you should have ways of getting in touch with people, letting people know, hey, I'm here, come and rescue me. And the gentleman who I have on the podcast today, he developed a product which I think is pretty darn remarkable. It's a incredible improvement to the VS17 panel. I don't even put those two in the same category anymore, because one is heavy and clunky and has limited capability and it requires supplements. This one does a little bit more. So as you guys know, like, I'm always on the pursuit of new gear. And this is gear that I think is really useful. But this isn't just a podcast about a piece of gear. It's also a podcast about this idea of signaling in general, an important discussion, which maybe isn't quite as exciting as firearms or knives or building fires or trapping animals. But at the end of the day, if you do need to signal for help, I think this gentleman and his product and this idea of signaling is going to get you out of a bind. So with me today, I've got Jason Marks of Team Eastees, and that's probably going to be the first question I'm going to ask him after I say, how the heck are you, is what the heck is an Eastee? So Jason, good morning, sir. Hopefully you've got a cup of coffee in front of you. How you doing today?
I do. Good morning, Kevin. First, appreciate you having me on. I've been pretty excited about this one. Done a couple of podcasts on this thing and been looking forward to yours quite a bit. So I'm excited to be on here and chatting with your listeners and you. So an Eastee. yeah, it kind of started off as a joke between a couple of buddies. The guys that kind of helped me develop and pushed me to starting the company and making this product and getting it patented. We were all from the East Coast. And so a few years back, there was kind of a, I don't know how to really put it, but there was basically a joke that was going around talking about the Western hunters compared to Eastern hunters. And the guy was calling the Western hunter Westies. And just as a joke, one day, me and my buddy were getting ready to gear up for an elk hunt out in Montana. And we just started calling ourselves the Eastees, just as a, you know, something different. So anyway, all of us being from the East Coast, that's what we just kind of dubbed ourselves. And just for fun, I drew up a slogan or a logo, and I just bored them one day and drew it up and threw it on a hat. And then it just kind of went, you know what, let's turn it into an actual company. So Team Eastees is just that. It's just the name of some guys that from the East Coast that decided to put something together. And, you know, there's so many different names for so many different companies that are, you know, very attributable to what they're doing. And this is not. So I definitely get a lot of questions about the name. A lot of guys look at me, how do you spell Easties? I'm like, oh man, all right, here we go. So it's a little bit different. I get that, but it's something that's been kind of with us for several years now. And we just decided to run with that for the company name. That's it, really. Not an exciting story by any means.
But I mean, it's a very real thing that's out there. Like people say, well, you East Coast hunters, you sit up in trees, you know, we're out here in the wide open. And I'll tell you, like, I've hunted both and both of them have their challenges. And I'm not trying to sound like the mayor of hunting or like a diplomat of hunting, but I'll just say, like, try both. You know, they're both really fun. They're both really exciting. And a little friendly rivalry has never hurt anyone. You know, there's some interesting comparisons, right? Like East Coast hunters, you can't use super high magnification binoculars because your eyes will go all bonkers as you're like going through the foliage with like 10 or 12 power binoculars. Out west, you love the high power magnification and you're glassing more out west. And, you know, you're not dragging the way that you drag here in the East Coast out west. You know, you're quartering and packing out. So, I mean, it's, again, I'm not trying to be the mayor. I don't feel like I need to say like everyone should just get along. It's like, look, I'm all for joking and joshing people.
No, we've fallen in love with hunting out west, man. I mean, I grew up whitetail hunting, turkey hunting all up and down the East Coast. And just tree stands 99% of the time. Mm-hmm. Turkeys was a little run and gun, but for whitetails, it was tree stands. I guess about 8 or 10 years ago, somewhere in there, I went on my first elk hunt. And just been doing it myself since then and gotten pretty good. Done some mule deer hunts, done some elk hunts. Finally got to do my first moose hunt last year. But yeah, loving both sides of it for sure. You know, and yeah, friendly rivalry is always fun to have kind of between everybody. But yeah, at the end of the day, we're all hunters. And I mean, gosh, if you spend any time following any backcountry hunter, like social media pages, it's under so much attack anymore that you gotta just kind of make sure that we all get along and we kind of police ourselves, which you know, for the most part, a lot of us do. But you see something awesome, try it, man. That's all I gotta say, is if it looks cool, give it a shot. It's so much fun. And, you know, going with an outfitter is awesome. I've done that a few times, but going by yourself, man, you're forced to learn. And honestly, going by yourself, that's what sparked me to do this. Mm-hmm. We ran with the Mini, the Garmin InReach Mini. But we noticed we'd get into some nasty canyons a few times and we'd have no satellite signal.
Right.
It was rare. I mean, very rare, but you would drop into some just hellacious holes and you would lose all comms. And so that's what honestly sparked us to do this. My buddy, he was actually my captain and then went on to become my company commander, at Fort Bragg, I guess Fort Liberty now or whatever.
Just call it Bragg.
Yeah. We won't get into that.
All right.
That's a sensitive subject, but, he was Pathfinder, you know, tabbed out, had all of his freaking credentials. And so on his first hunt with us, he brought a small section of VS-17 panel. Mm-hmm. And we got talking about it. He said, man, we need to make something lighter. Like he cut it down to, I forget, it was like 12 or 15 by 15, 12 by 12, something like that. He's like, we need to get something bigger. And so I just winged it, taught myself how to sew, started doing some research on materials. The first one was not good. Not good at all.
What'd you use for material on that first one?
And, you know, I decided to kind of look a little more into it and try to figure out better materials and what made the materials better and what made for the best materials. And I kind of just made my own.
What did you use on that first one for materials?
Dude, honestly, I don't even know. I went on Amazon and found some lightweight ripstop and
chinesium,
some random reflective material.
Yeah.
And sewed it together. And it was like the rips, it felt plasticky. It was weird. It felt like something you'd get off Amazon, mm-hmm. you know? But yeah, it just was large, kind of clunky. The colors were okay. But it just, it looked like something that someone sewed for the first time ever in their life. And, you know, that did the job, but I don't know, I'm kind of a perfectionist. I got a little bit of OCD. So I was like, man, I want to learn to do this a little bit better. And so I made a few for me and a couple of close buddies because they saw it and thought it was a good idea. And one of my buddies is in the FBI that carries it, and he's a special agent. And he was out one time, and the medical team was out there, and they were setting up an HLZ for, you know, possibilities, right? And he said, hey, let me toss you this. And they got all excited about it. And he called me that afternoon and goes, you need to patent this thing and make it a thing. And that was honestly the beginning of the whole turn it into a company, was the excitement shown over a medical team from a three-letter agency. Been making them, kind of perfecting them since then, but I think we've got it down now. We got two different sizes and subtle changes. One's kind of geared more specific to backcountry hunters, mm-hmm. and then one's more specifically geared towards, you know, put in your car, hikers, backpackers, things like that. But yeah, it's been a pretty fun ride so far.
And now what's the nomenclature for it? It's not VS-17. What's the exact product name? The smaller one,
so
the backpacker?
The first one we made was actually a system, and I still am making it. It was meant to be specific for HLZs, helicopter landing zones. And so it had an anchor system. It had a bunch of different things going for it. We actually called it the Emergency Landing Area Marking System, the ELAMS. We just kept the name for the smaller version. We just called it the ELAMS Ultralight or the ELAMS Mini, something like, I think it's the ELAMS Ultralight. And because it's not so much an HLZ, it's more of a specific find me, I'm right here, and or here's a safe place to land. It's less of a system. It just has stake loops or like loops in each corner to be staked into the ground. If you don't have tent stakes or something like that, you can throw a rock in each corner. I've done that a few times, but it's less of a trying to keep it on the ground when the helicopter comes in, because it's your profession to put one of those on the ground. It more just a, you're in trouble and you need to get found. And if it, you know, gets blown away and, you know, one of the guys grabs it or tears up, so be it, you're safe, you're alive. The other one you want to reuse more often, and ideally it doesn't get blown away. So we put a whole anchor system on it and did all kind of stuff. It was really cool, design for the big one. But yeah, the backpacker version, we just kept the same name, the ELAMS, for running the name anyway, Alan. Just because, God, naming stuff, man.
Yeah.
You come up with a new product and you try to name it, and you put 15 names together and send it to your attorney, and they go, nope, can't use this one, can't use this one. And there's 3 weeks of racking your brain to try to figure it out, because somebody somewhere has a name that's too close. So I just went, well, you don't have this one, I'll just keep the name.
Yeah, I'm dealing with that right now. You know, separate to Fieldcraft, I do a lot of product design, and with this one very large mm-hmm. company I'm working with right now to develop something, that all that we have left to do is just sign the paperwork, and I'm going to run it through my LLC. But the attorneys on the other side said, we cannot use the name that they provided because it's too close to, get this, a company that Fieldcraft is doing business with. So as opposed to doing any kind of, you know, weird business, shady business, I'm like, look, we'll just change the damn name. Let's call it this instead. And the guy was like, I actually like that name better. I'm like, I don't care what, call it piece of crap. Literally call it the piece of crap, you know, product. And, you know, I guarantee it's going to sell because people are going to like the product. They don't care about the name.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to step back to something that you mentioned, because let's talk about names. You said that your buddy was a Pathfinder. And I have a friend who was on a TV show. His name was Tom Moore, who was a Pathfinder. And that term Pathfinder, you know, it's a very elite MOS in the military, right? Like, it's something that you don't just say, like, hey, I'm a Pathfinder. They pay very, very, you know, close attention to their ranks and who's in them, who's not. So what exactly is the role of a Pathfinder for someone who's never heard what that actual role is in the military?
So for me not being one and only working with a few of them, mm-hmm. I mean a few, because like you said, it's kind of an elite, you know, not a lot of people go to it. They go through all types of, you know, figuring out plots, pathfinders, literally. They're figuring out the directions, the ways to go, figuring out locations for helicopters to land, basically setting up the battlefield through multiple different angles, looking at it geographically, visually, aerial views of it. I mean, they're breaking it down. And they're very familiar with code, visual code. The VS-17 panel folded different angles, different ways, tells certain people different things. You know, it was two-sided, two colors. It was pink on one side and orange on the other. And if it was folded in, you know, a third or a corner was folded down, it told people different information. It's not just a Mark Friendlies or not just a Mark HLZs. It's literally a code product. So yeah, I mean, obviously, like I said, I haven't been through the course or never did go through the course, being retired now, chances of going through it are pretty slim, but, he's been pretty, my buddy that is the Pathfinder, he's been pretty, pretty important to have along this journey for kind of, you know, holding ideas and putting everything together. And, you know, I'm pretty good at reading a topo map, but there's certain things that he's pointed out that I just didn't quite wrap my head around, you know? But yeah, maybe you can kind of expand on it a little bit more than I can. But yeah, from what I know, that's the like kind of their main deal with that. They've got so many other jobs and things too. Right. So I don't know. What have you kind of come across? What have you seen? I'm not sure if you were Pathfinder or not.
God, no, 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 no. I did not have any military experience, and I'm always quick to point that out, because, you know, the last thing I ever want is someone to be like, oh, stolen valor. And it's like, dude, I never served. I was a history teacher before I did the survival thing. And, or I should say I was a history teacher as I did the survival thing. And, you know, I'd never get into any military arguments. Like, what's the best out there? Army, Air Force, you know, it's like, I don't do that. It's like, that's a family fight, you know? And that's like jumping in, stopping two brothers fighting. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to become friends with either brother if you break up that fight. In fact, both brothers will probably start beating you up. So I just stay out of military arguments, but I do know, like, cause my late mentor Marty was an infantry guy in Vietnam. And he's like, yeah, the Pathfinders out there, I mean, their job was long range reconnaissance, you know, like they were in the field, like deep in the field. And again, very, very elite group of guys. So when you say that, like, that's one of those words where I hear it, it's like Pathfinder, like, oh, okay, that dude's been there, done that. And it's interesting that you brought up the whole idea of folding the VS-17 panel different ways and having a corner tucked and whatnot. It almost reminds me, like, when you watch like an old World War II Navy movie, you know, they've got the signal lights on the bow of the ship and they're, you know, sending code, but then they also have the flag system, put up this flag, that flag. And even something as simple as that, like, I know your panel and VS-17 panels and brightly colored jackets, like, you can create a simple code with your buddies hunting. Like, if I hold it up in my right hand, you know, and I wave it over my head, guess what? I found something. And if I hold it up with my left hand, you know, then maybe it's like, I'm just indicating my location, that type of thing. Like, even something binary like that, where you just come up with something like, if I hold it with two hands over my head, now, I don't know what that would technically be called, but, you know, one hand, two hand, three hands, or no, one hand, two hand, both hands. I don't have three hands. I think that's a simple code that if you and your friends establish it, you now have the capability of communicating. And again, not a military guy, but I do know that combat effectiveness is shooting, moving, communicating, and supporting. Well, now you have the ability to communicate over a great distance in the backcountry, where maybe you don't have a radio. Maybe radios are illegal to use while hunting. You can use something like a panel, or if you don't have a panel, wave your damn hat. You know what I mean? Like whatever it is. But I think what most people will do, and it's frustrating, is like, well, I have a whistle, I have a mirror, I'm throwing it in my pack. You know, if I need it, I know how to use it. Well, do you really know how to use it? Or are you just saying you have it and you'll figure it out as you go? Like, what would you say would be like some advice for someone if they were to carry something brightly colored, like what are some basic things, like skills wise, that a person could do?
I think the first thing you said, or, you know, the first thing I would say is what you said. Do you really know how to use it? You know, mine's pretty simple. You pull it out, you set it down in an open area to where it can be seen from either other hikers ridge wise or from the sky, or both, if you can get it at the right angle. But like, you know, whistles, signal mirrors, you got to get that angle down, and you can't just read instructions. Go out, just stand in your front yard for 20 minutes, pick a tree, get the sun lined up and blast that tree. You know, you got to practice with anything and everything. You got to practice with God, your freaking garment. All you got to do is hit one button, but you know, A, you better make sure that you turn that thing on before you went out. You know, B, like, you got to make sure it's charged up. That one's pretty simple. But yeah, you got whistles. You know, the downside to whistles, I think having multiple of these items, because they're all so small and lightweight, right? They weigh nothing. They take up no space in your pack. Even mine, which is 3 foot by 3 foot, when it's folded out, when it's down into a stuff sack, it's like 2.5 inches by 3 inches, and it weighs 2.5 ounces. So again, it's larger than, say, your signal mirror, but not by much. And you could throw it in a cargo pocket or a fanny pack, even if you're not going out for, you know, for a long weekend, you're just going out for a few hours hike. That, along with a whistle and or a mirror, it's a great combo. But the mirror and the whistle, you got to know a few things. You know, like the whistle, like you said, there is code to whistles. You can just start blasting the whistle and someone hears it. They're going to hopefully have enough curiosity to say, man, I need to go over and check that out. That sounds like distressful. But if the wind's not in your favor, you're screwed. You know, if it's a really windy day, which, gosh, it's spring right now, you get up in the mountains and your average day, yeah, you'll have calm mornings and calm evenings. Your afternoons are 10, 15, 20 mile an hour winds are just the norm up there. You know, I think springtime just about everywhere is windy. So you got to take that into consideration, make sure that you're going to be actually heard. But the signal mirrors, man. Yeah. Like I said, go out your front yard, find a tree across the street and get that sunlight just right. Figure it out. It won't take you long, but if you're just trying to wing it in the first helicopter plane that flies overhead, you don't quite understand the angles that need to be put together. If you miss it, you just missed your opportunity, you know, and you pray that that plane is actually looking for you and that he circles back by, or helicopter or whatever. If it's just some random dude flying and he doesn't see that signal coming from somewhere, he's gone. Your opportunity's passed. Another option is building a fire. You smoke that fire pretty good, and that's going to send up some smoke. But can you build a fire in austere weather, you know, or in crappy weather, if it's raining or snowing or has rained for hours on end and everything's soaked? Can you still get that fire going? Those are all things you need to practice. And you know, going through some of the courses that you and Mike and some of the other guys put together, you know, just basic stuff like that is kind of overlooked by some of the guys that are possibly in the class. And it really shouldn't be, because do you look at the stats on search and rescue, and I think it's Mount Rainier is like 30% open cases since 2019. I was reading the other day. That means 30% of the people that disappeared never got found. Not even a body. Like, nothing was closed on that case. You know, could it have been, did they get eaten by something? Did they fall into a crevice and never get found? Like, you know, you don't know what the situation was, but were they just in some thick crap and could have potentially built a fire, had enough knowledge on how to read a map, had enough knowledge on, you know, geographical features to figure out where they needed to get, if they were able to get there? You know, I mean, physically you may run out of, you know, stamina or whatever. You're out of water, out of food, out of everything. But yeah, it's shocking to look at some of these search and rescue statistics since really COVID. It's spiked because so many more people started going outside because they couldn't do anything inside. So hiking and backpacking and camping just shot through the roof around 2020. And around that same time, so did these loss numbers. It's pretty mind blowing.
Yeah, those numbers.
Yeah, the biggest thing is just learn how to use your stuff, man. Don't think something simple is just something to overlook and think you got it. Like, when you're screwed is not the time to learn.
Yeah, those numbers are surprising. Like, you hear a lot about people who have been lost or they've disappeared in like Joshua Tree, right? And I was in the Tetons a couple of years back. And when you first walk into a couple of the trails, you know, they always have like the, you know, be bear aware and mind the environment, that type of thing. And there were signs up everywhere for this guy. They're like, this guy, young, fit, went missing. Like, he was only like 24, 25. Like, they put up a picture of him. He looked like he was super healthy. Last seen, and it was months before, you know. And then out of curiosity, morbid curiosity, I did like a quick Google search of his name. And it's like, yeah, this person was last seen, active, still searching for this guy. You know, people think, well, search and rescue will come and get me, right? And that's like a common thing that we always hear. Well, someone will come and save me. Well, who is that someone? And then the other thing that I always like to just bring up is that search and rescue only happens when the search is over. You can't be rescued until the search is over. People have found you. Yep. So it might just be search and search. You know, a product like yours, a product like a VS17 panel, a signal mirror, you know, flares, chem lights, doing like a buzzsaw with a string on the end, you know, surveyor's tape, all those products help you move away from search and search into search and rescue, where someone is like, there's that person. But I think one of the problems is that there's a big difference between signal and noise. And, you know, if we're just looking at like an audio signal, right? Like, you can make a whole bunch of noise, but it doesn't carry a message. You know, I think when someone is like, when someone is actively searching for you, they will see something bright against like a muted backdrop and be like, okay, that's the person, because now you're using something that's like a known signal. You know, because there are plenty of tents out there that are the same color or similar color to what you're offering. But when someone's looking across the landscape, like, hey, let's find that guy, and there's nothing else on that landscape, or it's in a spot where, hey, that person most likely isn't going to camp there because it's inhospitable. Then now it goes, like I said, from search and search to search and rescue, because they're like, okay, that's exactly where that person is. It's not just a camper who, you know, put up a quick hooch in order to go get out of the rain while he's fishing or whatever. I'm curious, like, who's currently using your product? I know we were speaking before the podcast and I said, we got to talk about that online. You were saying that a couple of the mill guys have adopted it and they want to use it, but unfortunately world events have kind of slowed down some aspects. So who's currently using it, saying like, you know, this is actually a valuable tool?
So it's pretty widespread. It's been really cool, actually. It started literally, like I said, it literally started with a bureau medical team that got excited about it. So a couple of them are using it. I know one medic is using it. Interestingly enough, one of those guys actually that purchased one for me for his medical team, he marks his gear and does all kind of other stuff with it. Like, he doesn't just use it for, you know, for HLZs. Like, he drops his pack to go run over and do something, you know, help somebody out with XYZ, and just grabs his fanny pack because that's all he needs and he needs to get there quick. He throws his pack on the ground and wraps it in the ELAMS marker, which helps him go right back to it because he can spot it, especially if he's in the woods and during training. But so those guys are using it. I've got Army currently. Well, actually, Air Force is using it. Some JTAC guys have it in Iraq right now. We talked about that a little earlier before we went live. But they're using it. They were using it during some 9-line medevac training next to what the Army currently, or well, the military currently uses, which obviously needs assistance at night. It does not work at night. So you got to put infrared chem lights or regular chem lights on the corners or whatever, but it works great during the day. So they were kind of pitting it up against it because, you know, just testing it out, and they've liked and appreciated its lightweight size and, you know, all that other stuff. And the fact that they don't need glow sticks at night because it works under infrared. They're hitting it with their night vision and it's blazing, you know, it's hitting them in the face. So they're enjoying that. Campers, backpackers have been using it. But what I was going to say was one of the medical guys, for the Bureau, he's actually a Boy Scout troop leader. And he brought up that it is, it works really well for them to earn, I believe it's three different merit badges, because there's three different merit badges that require Boy Scouts to signal to the sky during a search and rescue situation. And so he's using it with them as well. I'm actually putting together a small course that I'm going to do for free for some of the local Boy Scout teams on exactly this, doing signaling. So I'm going to work with some of the local guys here and, you know, try to put on a couple of little free courses for them to kind of help the instead of just your basic training, you know, that these guys are getting, get a little further into it, a little more detailed, and actually have like a drone fly overhead to, you know, so they can see on screen what it looks like from aerial views and things like that, which, you know, typically will excite the kids. Just seeing it on the ground and accomplishing it is great, but they're going to see it from the air, from an actual search and rescue perspective. And that'll be really cool for them. I think they'll dig it.
I don't care who you are. A drone will make anyone excited. You know, we did some training a while back where, you know, it was a scenario, it was out in Utah, and we had these students who were, you know, in this like mock escape and evasion type of, you know, ordeal. And the media guys flew a drone overhead, and it was the funniest thing, because we're embedded with the students. We're playing into the scenario too, as like, you know, resistance fighters. And when the drone comes overhead, you hear the students say, "Oh my God, they've got a drone," you know, like, and they freak out. Go ahead.
No matter how old you are, you become a kid again and just start staring at it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not that common.
Stop what you're doing to look at the drone. I don't know.
Yeah, they're not that commonplace yet, where people are like, "Oh, it's just a drone," you know, until Jeff Bezos and Amazon starts doing like drone deliveries of whatever, you know, and we see them in on every front porch every day. I don't think anyone is going to be any less excited when one pops up.
Yeah.
You know, I plan on taking your panel. I just got invited and I got to actually finalize my travel details. But Jim Huntsman of the Western Hunts, the Western Huntsman podcast, he invited me out in June to do a spring bear hunt out in Idaho. And, you know, last time I did a travel hunting trip where I had to fly with firearms and I had to fly with, you know, spotting scope and all that stuff, then I was really counting ounces, you know. And then when I get on the ground, I want to make sure that everything I carry, like every ounce, is accounted for. It's not like there's any wasted space, to the point where, like, I'm going away from like a half inch ferro rod that I normally would carry just tramping around in the woods out here teaching. I'm going to a 3/8 inch ferro rod because there is a noticeable difference in weight. And I think if you can budget your weight carefully, like normally, like day to day, I'm not carrying one of your panels. I have one of your panels, but I don't carry it day to day in my pockets, but I will carry one day to day in my backpack. And since I did that video on YouTube, I put it in there. But when I go out west, I'm going to carry that thing on my person just because I know what the stakes are, you know? And I think that budgeting aspect is so important. It's like, well, what could you give up out of your daily loadout when you're hiking in the woods? What would you give up for an extra 2 ounces that ensures your capability? And something that I think we got to talk about is like other uses for that panel. When you first contacted me, I think it was last year around this time, I was out and I was hanging out with, who was it? It was, what's his name? It was, oh gosh, Barklow. I was hanging out with Barklow in, at Montana Knife, the grand opening of their shop. And you reached out to me. You're like, "Hey, I saw you were with him." And then we started talking and I was like, "Hey, you might want to try adding this, this, and this to the panel." I think one of the easiest things you can do with that panel is like an extra way you can use it. One, you can use it for like a makeshift pressure bandage. Like it's a long fabric. You can definitely do that. You can definitely use it as like a hobo bundle, put all your crap in there. Or if you're foraging, you can put all your berries or whatever in there. What are some of the other uses that you found for it? Because I think of like a shade structure, like if you have to get something out of the shade, you could possibly do it with that. What are some of the other ones that you guys have come up with?
Well, first of all, through the use of 550 cord, paracord, all things are possible. So I actually used it in conjunction with 550, not in a necessary situation by any means, but just testing it out to see what I could do with it. Like you said, you know, possible pressure dressing, things like that. We were able to do like limb immobilization, you know, if you needed to build a little makeshift sling.
Oh yeah.
Get your arm in a, you know, sling or something like that. Or, but yeah, pressure dressing is one of them. We were talking earlier about code, and John Barklow, you know, he was talking about this would be a great way to like signal your buddies on a stalk. And like you were talking about, you can make up your own code. We've actually kind of done that. And so like, if let's say like last year we went on a spring bear hunt in Idaho, just like you're talking about, we went last year and we were prepared on a stalk that the spotter was going to stay in one location, keep eyes on the bear or whatever it was at the time. It was a bear, but you know, any game animal. And this is how I've actually heard from a couple of outfitters that they've been using it. The outfitter or the buddy stays on the animal with the glass, with the spotting scope, and he marks himself with the elams. And, mm-hmm. and so a lot of the guys, especially hunters specific, they've gone to, and that's, I actually designed it specifically more for hunters. I called it the backcountry location marker. It's still an elams. It's still all the same technology, if you want to call it technology, same materials, but instead of putting a tent loop on each corner, one corner has a very large loop that you can loop through your belt loop. You can loop it around. It actually fits around my 65 millimeter spotting scope end. So I can just kind of drape it and let it hang off the end of my spotting scope. And then the other side has 2 8-inch tassels to just tie off to anything you need it to tie off to. But it's a little smaller. So it's even lighter weight, but it's made to kind of be more for spotting your buddies, you know, or like doing code. So like what we kind of did is as the hunter moves around and up to the other ridge to start getting in, he may lose sight of the animal. He looks back to find you. You're in camouflage. You're not going to get seen. You got to be jumping around, waving your arms, and then you chance the animal possibly seeing you versus just a piece of orange material that's not moving for the most part, right? That animal's not going to spot that so much. They're based heavily on movement. That's what draws their attention, you know? And then if they're watching you and you're jumping up and down, waving your arms, they might see that. And then that your hunt's over, they're going to move out. But what we've done is kind of just held it steady, put it around a belt loop, put it around your spotting scope. The hunter looks back to find you. Boom. He sees the orange right there, throws his binoculars up on it. And like, for me, we do like, if the animal is say 300 yards to their right, I'll take my right arm, holding it in my right arm, and I'll punch it out 3 times, each time being 100 yards, something like that. If he needs to gain elevation, I'll punch straight up towards the air.
That's smart.
You know, for however many feet he needs to climb. And so like, that's the one that we've kind of worked out. And there's a few other outfitters, like I said, who have been using it, and they've kind of put their own little thing together. But yeah, it's, you know, you got the obvious, the search and rescue, immobilization of limbs, all these different applications, you know, for it. There's tons of them, honestly. And yeah, the larger one, the three by three, if you absolutely had to get, you know, some kind of shade or something, you could try to rig something up for sure. It is water resistant intentionally to ensure that they orange, because like if you take a cotton hat that splays orange, you'd submerge it in water, it's going to turn like a darker red. And over distance, that darker red starts to look brown to your naked eye. And so you can't have that happen in this situation. So I had it dipped, in a, light, it doesn't allow the light to affect it. Like you can't, it won't go. If you use it over and over and over and over, it's going to hold the same orange. It's not going to fade. But in that same dip, it allowed it to become, very, very water resistant, almost waterproof. I haven't had it leak on me yet. So you could potentially even use it to just drape over your head if you had no other options. But yeah, like you were saying with a little hobo thing, you could run some 550 cord through it and throw your absolute necessities in there. And you spoke on John Barklow. He talks a lot about his possibles pouch, which is, you know, one of everything that is absolutely necessary basically to get you off of a mountain or, you know, to get you 24 hours, you know, to where you can drop your big pack if you're hunting or you're hiking and you don't have to carry that 50-60 pounds or whatever. You just carry this one little pouch and that you can absolutely throw it in there and throw it over a little stick or something and carry it out that way. It's great, great little setup. I've done it a few times. In fact, after you told me to do a couple of things to it, I tried it a little bit. And just for fun, I started putting weight in it. I slung some 550 cord through the loops and put it on a scale. And I got up to 15 pounds and nothing was stretching or tearing or anything like that. And I went, well, if you've got more than 15 pounds in your possibles pouch, you might want to relook at that thing. So, but yeah, I'm using pretty heavy duty thread. I'm using everything. It's holding pretty strong no matter what you got going on. And being ripstopped, if you do cut a little hole in it, it's not going to continue just tearing like it would if it was like a sil nylon or a poly or something along those lines. It's going to keep its shape, keep its form. It's not going to tear too bad. So you really could put it through the ringer. And a lot of people kind of just sent me random. Another thing, random. Speaking of random photos, this past hunting season, a lot of guys were wrapping their animal heads,
really
packing the animal out, and through the marker up in the antlers, you know, through the loops on the antlers. That way, when they were hiking out, some idiot didn't see them and send around flying at some antlers.
Yeah,
because yeah. God, that happens too often. You know, like I saw something move and I shot at it. Oh, cool. Well, now there's a dead kid over there, you know, but there were several guys sent me photos of wrapping the heads or throwing it up in the antlers to where there was, you know, it would limit that possibility for sure.
You know, if I had an opportunity to give like a suggestion for another product, I would say, you know, I carry a military triangular bandage every single day in my back left pocket. And I carry that because I use it to, you know, do a number of things in the campground. You know, when I'm teaching in class, if we're doing a boil water challenge, I'll take cups off the fire. I'll use it for that hobo bundle. Like I'll do a lot with just a piece of fabric. I would love to see something about that size, whether it's triangular or it is square. Like I know yours right now is 36 by 36 roughly. Like if it were to go to 24 by 24, I wonder what that would look like folded into something like the size of a wallet and just call it like the EDC panel, because I do carry that thing every damn day. And, you know, I think having something like a flexible utility tool, it's just so valuable. So whether you take like a 36 by 36 and you cut it in a triangular one, like I know you've got a section on your site for like cosmetic blems, like do me a favor and like hook me up with a cosmetic blem and I'll beat the crap out of that thing. I'll use it for everything. Now I'm not a big fan of grabbing things that are nylon or grabbing things that are hot with nylon, but you know, if I understand that there's that limitation, then it is what it is. But having a small, you know, everyday carry size, I think would be kind of cool. So just an idea. I know that.
So that's what the backcountry location one, the one that's kind of geared more towards hunters. It's actually 20 inches by 20 inches.
Oh, it is.
Cut it down drastically.
Okay.
The whole thing weighs, it doesn't have its own pouch. It rolls up and I use the two tassels on the one corner to tie it up in a bundle.
Mm-hmm.
I just roll it and it weighs 1.2 ounces. It's nothing. you know, it's not even there. You can throw that thing in your back pocket, like you're saying. But yeah, it is nylon, so you may not necessarily want to grab something hot with it, but you can certainly use it for quite a few other things.
Gosh, now you got me like questioning, do I have the 36 by 36 or do I have the Hunter panel? I got to double check now because
you've got the 36.
I was about to say,
because I just came out with the 20. Yeah. And after talking to Barklow, a couple months ago, I kind of came out with it off of some of his suggestions and then told him about it and sent it to him. And he was like, dude, I'm going to carry the big one in my pack and I'm carrying the small one on my bino harness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I was going to be doing with it anyway, is it rolls up so small. I can actually tuck it inside my bino harness with my binos, and I've got it looped through. So if I've got to pull it out real quick and use my binos at the same time, it's hanging right there off of my chest. So it's great for signaling your buddy, you know, or just doing a flag for a meetup. Like, hey, I'm up here. You know, I know you're in that general area, but where the heck are you? I don't want to walk 100 yards to the right. And then after I'm exhausted from climbing 1,000-foot elevation, then start trying to find you. Now, show me where you are. And so that's kind of the point to the backcountry location marker.
Gotcha. Being,
it's a little bit smaller, just a little easier for like a hunter to handle throughout the day, where he might need it just to flag his buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Or to flag a stalk. And then the big one, like I said, I keep in my pack, my main pack, for that, oh shit, you know, emergency situation.
Yeah. By the way, shout out to Barklow, who it looks like he just had hip replacement surgery, and
yeah, he did.
Like within a week he's walking. Like,
yep. He's hobbling around. I saw a video of him. I texted him. I said, man, dude, you know,
modern medicine,
hoping you heal up quick. And, yeah, just gosh, 5 or 6 days later, he was out walking. So hip replacement's interesting, man. My father-in-law just had it done and he had a knee replacement surgery, and it was harder for him to bounce back from the knee than the hip. Like he's used to run marathons and all kind of stuff. He runs a couple miles every single day. So he healed up a little faster than your average dude, but he was also pushing himself to heal faster, you know, but he bounced back from that hip replacement faster than he did knee. And he was pissed. You know, he's like, why is this taking so long? He would think a hip would be worse, but no, either way, I'm not looking forward to that. That's inevitable for most military guys, I think, hip and or knee replacement. And like, man, I'm not looking forward to any of those things. I've had enough surgeries. I don't want to add to my list.
Yeah. And again, if you're trying to avoid surgeries like that, preventative maintenance goes a long way. Like back in the day, I used to carry such a heavy backpack when I would go on trips just because I could. And I was like, I'm young, I'm strong, whatever. I look back at some of the stupid stuff that I carried on day hikes, and I would carry like a 35, 40 pound ruck up to the top of a mountain. It's like, I could have gotten away with 10 pounds, guaranteed. Yeah. 10 pounds. And I forgot, I think it might have been my buddy, Lieutenant Mike. He always says like, you know, I've reached that age, you know, where I have the income to avoid making stupid decisions, you know, that type of thing. Like, or it might have been my buddy Big John who says that, where like when you get older and you can afford better gear that allows you to be more comfortable, you kind of give up the bravado of like, well, I can do this with whatever. It's like, you could, but why aren't you just getting something that will keep you,
yep,
keep you upright, keep you from like hobbling and destroying your knees or your back or your hip or whatever.
It's a similar mentality, honestly, to people that I'm kind of running into. It's amazing how many people look at my products, go, that's a great idea, but man, I don't really need that. Like, I don't go that far. I don't go on these big hikes. I only go like maybe a mile and then I come back to the truck later that day. You know, and I've been doing it for years. I don't need it, you know? And so it's kind of the same mentality of like, I can do it. You know, I can do it on my own. I can go heavy. It's not a big deal. In the end, you pay for it when it's heavy later on down the road. And if you don't have something that doesn't take up any space, doesn't take a whole heck of a lot of training, I mean, pull it out, stick it on the ground, you know, learn how to blast a plane with your mirror, you know, learn how to be more efficient at building a fire, especially in like bad weather. Like just learn how to do it. Take a little bit of time, learn how to do it, take a, you know, make a little extra teeny cubby hole in your pack, learn, just carry it. You know, stop being hardheaded. That's, I run into a lot of hardheaded people. They think it's a good idea, but they just have this mindset of, I can do it on my own, you know, or I'm young, I'm strong, I can do, you know, I can carry that heavy pack. It's like, guys, just, it's not necessary. It's not necessary to carry the heavy pack. And it's not necessary to carry a marker, but man, you know, that few dollars and a couple of ounces can become something really big later on. But yeah, it's a lot of the people that just, you know, I got a whistle. Well, cool. What happens if you don't have a lung, you know? Actually, and we keep talking about John Barklow, but he wrote an article talking about basically this, what we're talking about right now, being able to be found. And buddy was thrown off his horse and punctured a lung. That man had to crawl. He had a broken collarbone, I think, and a punctured lung, and something was messed up with his leg. He had to crawl off the mountain, saw a band of hunters on another ridge within normal yelling or whistling distance, but he didn't have a freaking, he was running on one lung, you know. Gosh. Like, God, just the craziest crap can happen. And if you put yourself in a situation enough times to where something bad can happen, chances are it's going to happen. So, you know, motorcycle riders, I don't know if you ride a bike or not. I do. I've ridden for 20 plus years now. We got a saying, there's those that are going down and those that have been down. There is no in between. You're either going to go down or you've been down. And luckily I've been down. So I'm praying I don't have to do that again, but you go into the wilderness, man, you go into a situation where something could go wrong. Sooner or later, something's going to go wrong. And maybe it's nothing big and you can self recover, you know, but God, you know, God forbid it's a situation where you can't, you know, you're running off of one lung, you're running off of, you know, you got a broken leg. You can barely hobble out to an open area to build your fire, set up your marker. And then, oh, by the way, it starts snowing, so you got to get yourself out of the elements. Well, leave that static marker out there and get your ass up underneath a tree branch or a big boulder or something like that, and just let it work for you. You know, you pushed your SOS button on your Garmin or your Spot or whatever other, you know, GPS marker you got, and let the static marker work for you.
And yeah, I think that's something.
You can get out of the sun, you can get out of the rain, the snow. Like, don't be hard-headed. Let, you know, have it. It's not going to hurt to carry it. Trust me. 2.5 ounces.
When you mention like the riders that have either gone down or will go down, you know, same thing can be said too for like people who run out of gas in their car or who have never run out of gas or who will run out of gas, or you've never been stranded or you're going to be stranded. And it's worthy to bring up the story again, because I think it's so important. And it's one that my late mentor, shared this tip, and I shared this on the cold weather vehicle kit, podcast I did a while back. But, my late mentor would say, like, in your vehicle, you should have a tent pole and you should have a bright piece of fabric. And if you're in an area where there are like the highway is slightly elevated and there's a dip, and if you get snow, you could easily fall into that dip. You could drive off that dip. And now if there's snow, you could get buried into that dip pretty easily if the plow trucks come around. So Marty used to say, like, carry a brightly colored flag that you could put on the end of a pole and you could raise it out of your vehicle. So if someone came by, they would see the flag. They wouldn't see your vehicle, but they'd see that flag blowing in the wind. And it might be 15, yep, you know, 12, 15, 10 feet up in the air, which becomes greater visibility. Well, that tip actually saved a woman's life, and she came back and told Marty, hey, I used it and, you know, it was so beneficial. So I tell people, like, if you ever go to a store that's giving away like a blaze orange t-shirt for like a gun shop, take it, cut it, put it in your vehicle, you know, and you now have that capability. If you find a tent pole at a yard sale or at a thrift shop, pick up that tent, throw away the tent, keep the damn pole, you know, now you have like a $5 option of signaling. So even if someone isn't planning on going into the backcountry and carrying one of your panels, like I said, I think there's an everyday carry, there's an option for people with this. Like, I can put an extra 2 ounces in my bag, whether it's a panel or a couple Clif bars, and now I have greater capability every single day. I think it's such a useful tool, and hopefully, you know, for those of you that are out there that are like, okay, well, you know, how much is it? You're not going to see sticker shock, you know, because it's not an inexpensive item, but it's also one of those items that you're going to say, wow, it's a little pricey, but at the same time, it has this capability, IR capability. It's super lightweight, easy to see. I think you're going to understand why you should invest in one. And maybe until you invest in one, you carry that surveyor's tape or you carry that old t-shirt or that surplus VS17 panel, but realize there's always a better option. And I think we're at the pinnacle of it with this product, which is why I'm going to carry it when I go out to Idaho in 2 months. So we'll see what happens. What are your final thoughts on it? I mean, I'll give you the final word, then I'm going to ask you where people can find you. So like, what would you like to leave the listeners with?
Honestly, just, I guess my capabilities and maybe a quick reasoning is, you know, everybody says, so my stuff is all made in America. I've recently had to reach out to a manufacturer. It is still US. So materials, I know everybody gets bombarded with American made materials, American made everything. It's more expensive. Well, it is. And I actually did a breakdown on my Instagram the other day. And I won't get into it, but it was I took a few minutes and looked up all of my materials from distributors, manufacturers here in the US. And then I looked them all up in China to show the difference and the cost of just materials alone. And then the cost of labor in like China and Vietnam and these other countries. And so, yeah, the sticker price is a little bit up there. But it's honestly like, it's made in America, dude. It is. If I'm not selling it, someone here is, and they've had literal, I had a bunch of them come in that just did not look good. And I kicked them all back. I said, nope, here, matter of fact, let me show you a video. I put together a YouTube video specifically for them on training. I said, this is how I want it to be made. I'm not going to put out mediocre, you know, stuff. Like, it's gotta be, like I said, I'm a little bit perfectionist, a little bit OCD on that. So it's going to be tight. It's going to be just right. Speaking of that, what I can do, and I can do this probably right after we get off the podcast, is I'll put together a promo code for these guys that are listening. Let's do something weird. Let's do like 17%, you know, like a random number. I don't know. Everybody likes 15 or 20. Let's go in the middle of 17. It's just a random number. It's a fun number. We'll go with that. So if you guys are listening, use code FIELDCRAFT, and that'll get you 17% off. And, but yeah, check it out. It's on www.teameasties.com. And I think I would say final thing is, you know, there's a lot of different types of markers out there that are orange, hats, shirts, all kind of stuff. What sets mine apart is the material's not, if it gets wet, it's not going to change its color. It's not going to look different from a distance. And it's got day and night capabilities, and you're not going to have to worry about batteries. So it's a very simple design, but it's very, very effective. And I've been really, really happy with it and pleased with it. And I have not seen anything go wrong so far. Anybody that's bought it from me has not. I've actually got a lot of, you know, feedback. I carry it every single time I go out now, just because it is so small. It is so light. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's, I think that would probably be about what I would leave it on. But yeah, promo code FIELDCRAFT, 17% off. Cause why not?
Yeah. Why not? And we'll definitely catch up. You know, at the time that this podcast comes out, I'm guessing it's going to be in May. I'll be at the Fieldcraft Survival training events that we have scheduled at the SIG Academy. Right now, we're recording this, guys, in April. My land nav class is sold out at the SIG Academy. I only have 5 spots left in my modern survival skills class on June 30th. but I will be back at the SIG Academy on August 31st doing modern survival skills. And I'm going to be doing a giveaway of some Exotac gear and some Tough Possum gear. So come and train with me. You'll see me up there. Jason, hopefully we'll be able to catch up at the, you know, the Exeter Inn or something. I know you're in that neck of the woods now, right?
Yeah, I'm only 40 minutes from the SIG Academy. Yeah. So
we got to catch up.
Heck, I can even meet you and give you a few to hand out to people or something. Just giveaways.
We could definitely do that. We could definitely do that. So, all right, man. Well, hey, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. And for everyone,
thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah. And for everyone listening, thank you so much for supporting us. And we'll catch you next time.